Hi Garf, thank you for doing this. So you are brought up in Delhi, is it like?
Yes.
So did you study there all like till your high school, college, or?
Huh. So, I'm assuming you are from Bangalore.
I'm not from Bangalore actually. I'm from Mangalore.
Mangalore.
Yeah, I came here for my college. Yeah.
So I think what I've understood after traveling cities is that till Madhya Pradesh, or let's say to a certain extent, schools are usually up to class 12th, and what people you might call as junior college, we still call it school. So yes, first 12, till I was 18, I was studying in Delhi, born and brought up there, stayed all my life there, and then post the graduation or college, as I would like to call it, started. That's when I moved to Hyderabad.
Understood. How was it like growing up in Delhi?
It's a great place, good food, but at the same time, it's sort of above. I'd recommend everybody to live outside Delhi also, at least after they're 18 or whenever they can, because one otherwise you assume the entire world is a certain way. People who have been in Delhi all their life will think that the world functions in a certain way, but yes, living in different cities helped me expand my perspective for sure.
Understood. And were you like, did you have an idea that you'll be doing comedy even back then, or were you like the class clown or something like that?
I'd not say class clown. I was definitely an extrovert. Comedy happened much later while I was in college, but I was, let's say, into different forms of public speaking in school. So, let's say, flair of speaking or that comfort with language came early on.
Understood. Did you have any other interests, like apart from public speaking or?
Yeah, I did everything I could in school to bunk classes. I
Like you
played.
mean like you would get sent to competitions or something like that, huh?
Yep. So that I'd play in the football team for 7 years or so, and I'd to an extent that I'd prefer being a substitute there than being in class. Then I'd also, of course, public speaking and theater and basically every co-curricular that could happen in school, I tried my best to put my fingers in.
Understood. Did you have like a, I mean, did you have like a clear idea that this is something you wanted to do besides comedy, or I mean, you stumbled upon comedy later on, but was there like something that you wanted to tackle early on that, you know, after growing up, I want to do this, I want to get into this field, or were you just exploring a lot of things and not much clarity there?
So most of life, to be honest, I still don't know what I'll be doing 2 3 years from today, and I think most of my life is going to be there. But there was one point in life, which was I think class 11th, where I was one clear that I want to go get into an engineering college and specifically do civil engineering, and I held on to that plan for 6 years, worked very hard towards it. Focus, even if in college I might miss other subjects, but I'd still take an interest in civil subjects, and putting 6 years of consistent effort into it, I left the field in 3 months and decided that I'm not thinking too much long term going forward.
Understood. What about like, did you have like, was your family into like business and stuff like that? Did you have like, I mean, there are some people whose families will have like a business and then they will ask their children also to, you know, go in that direction. Did you have something like that, or what was like the family influence that?
So both my parents were into government jobs when I was in school. However, I think I was in class 9th or 10th when my dad took a brave step of letting go of a government job, which was extremely unheard of at that time. Took voluntary retirement and wanted to work on his own business. Of course, he tried multiple things and he's worked on different industries or businesses. But since his government job, he was also a civil engineer, so there was some influence there. But he never said that you have to become a civil engineer. He said keep pick whatever you branch you want or whatever, but I'd say that there was influence rather than pressure
Understood. Do you plan to go back to Delhi?
to live.
To live, I don't know. Do you plan to settle down in Bangalore?
Settle, look, I'm not, I'll be honest, I can say that okay, I'll be in this city for probably 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, but I can't say for sure where I would like to settle or let's say live long term. Like I was again after college placements, or let's say when I joined Shuttle, which was my first startup, the company was based in Gurgaon, so I knew I'm in Gurgaon till that's there. When I switched to full-time comedy, Bombay made a lot of sense. So I lived in Bombay for about almost 2 years. Now, Bangalore again right now makes sense because most of the startup ecosystem is here, and that's my current interest. 2 to 3 years from now, if I have a different interest, I'll go to the city which is most feasible for it.
So the chapter of Delhi, you think the chapter of Delhi, you think is pretty closed for you now?
Can't be sure. Like what I can say is, like now that I've once you've my theory is once you've lived independently away from parents, it's almost impossible to go back home. Like
That is
you've
true.
tasted that freedom or whatever you can call it. So even if I might go to let's say Delhi NCR, but I might stay separately, or my parents live in Delhi, I might stay in Gurgaon. But I'll not rule out the possibility. But again, I know like I might not be. Basically, I can't rule out any city at this point.
Any impact that do you think Delhi has an like today looking back Delhi has had an impact on you, like anything that from the city that you still carry the baggage of the city?
Yes, quite a few things. In terms of baggage, I'd say it's when people say that where you're from, I say I'm from Delhi, but I've recovered. And let's say the entitlement and a lot of other things have gone. But I still realize that in terms of how I speak or how extroverted I am, I'd call it, I think it's to an extent an advantage, but yes, most of my extrovert behavior comes from my history in Delhi.
Understood. What made you choose civil engineering, though?
Very interesting. So in the when I was in let's say class 9 to 11th or 12th, Delhi Metro was coming up, and of course there was massive escalation in real estate prices. And in whatever I observed in my Delhi ecosystem, I realized that people working in civil works or real estate were making more money than any other field. Of course, in Bangalore, people would say developers are the ones who are those unicorns, but at that age, at whatever limited understanding I had in the age of 15 to 18, I felt civil engineering was full of opportunities than other fields. And of course, I had my father who could guide me, or let's say, even if I was average at it, I know I'd have some guidance, so I picked civil.
How were you thinking about money back then? Like, I mean, in terms of like making money, even today, like, how do you think about when you like how much is enough, and you know, how like where do you want to go with money? You know, some people really want to make it want that high life, right? Like, you know, make millions of dollars or something like that. How do you think about money? How much is enough for you? What do you do with money also in general?
So one, I'd say money, like people might say that X amount is enough, but the truth is that even the richest people are still working. So we might think that, like people who say that okay, this much money is enough, think that this is the target, this is their short-term or long-term target, that once they want to at least reach there. Once they reach there, of course they could change that number, push it further, or in some cases even give up before that arrives if the target is too high. My relationship for now, I'd say okay, maximize it to an extent that it doesn't burn you out. Now of course I keep looking around in terms of what are the other avenues, is there a business opportunity, or is there let's say a way I can upskill or be in a space where I can make more. I will not say there's no drive to earn money, but at the same time, of course, I just draw it at a line where I have enough time to do something creative, or I'd pick the most money-making option based on either the skills I have or the 10 things that I'm okay doing. There would be things that I may not be, let's say, be sure of doing. For example, today it could be, let's say, example, coding. I know coding has immense amount of money that's possible, but then I know there are certain limitations that I won't pick it. So I'd maximize whatever I can in terms of the op things I want to do, and from a perspective of where I spend it, I'd say, well, again, how I see, so I feel that one of the hardest drugs to quit is a salary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And as someone you, one, like the first time I quit my job after 2 years of working at Shuttle, I realized that now whenever I start working, or let's say if I jump into a salary, I'm just sort of in a way building a runway for whatever project that I want to chase next. So probably 1 or 2 years later, if I want to start something of my own, or if I want to give comedy full time another shot, then I'm just saving up for runway. Of course, I invest in whatever way possible, try to save or keep my expenses to a minimum. But
I think one more thing is, like, I mean, no matter how much you make, you kind of upgrade that lifestyle as well. And you know, when you had X amount of money, let's say 20k, you'd be happy with like a masala dosa and like a tea and coffee. But now you want that pizza every Saturday afternoon, and then it becomes a catch-up game every 6 months, and you're always fighting for that next benchmark per se.
So luckily, I'm not someone who's aspiring for brands. Now, it could be fancy sneakers, it could be, let's say, Hugo t-shirt or whatever. Those are some things that I don't find rational. So at least I would not jump into that. Of course, in terms of eating out or going out with friends, that's something that has definitely scaled up as income has increased. But at the same time, at least I feel I'm in a certain stage where it can be controlled or nipped in the bud. And of course, like if you're going out with friends 4 times, let's say 10 times a month, and you're spending 2 to 3 grand a day, then you're probably capping it at 30k now. Whereas a pair of sneakers might cost, let's say, 80 grand. So I'd say ki most of my expenses are small ticket, 1 day or 2 day things. I've not luckily so far made high investments. Luckily, I'm on Android for the past 2.5-3 years.
Okay.
So that way I've also been safe. So I'm very averse to large ticket things. So I don't intend of buying a house. I've never really invested into a car. So those expenses
but why is that though? Like, I mean, what's the, like, you don't want, is that like a fear of commitment, or is that like, have you bought into this rental economy where, you know, nowadays I think there's a trend, instead of buying things, people want to rent out things. Which angle are you coming from?
So, from, I don't know which city I will be in next. So, which is why I'm like, if I get a car, then transferring all, it's a lot of hassle. Like when I was in Bombay, again, there parking is an issue, and most of my work was like, I've not been at a place, like, of course, I did have my father's old car when I was in Gurgaon. So Gurgaon is a city where, let's say, owning a vehicle makes sense. In Bangalore and Bombay, it doesn't. So in, let's say, if I move to a city where it's an easier way out, then I might go for, let's say, a vehicle or get a second-hand one, rather than think, okay, nahi, mereko, I want this aspirational BMW or something. And get a functional car which will get my job done.
So one more thing on the owning part, right? Like owning a house and owning a car, those are symbols of those are signals of like settling down, right? I mean, and do you think there's a right age to settle down? Like, I mean, in my father's generation or in the older generation, I think it was more, you know, familial. I mean, you reach a certain age and your mother or father would, you know, find a girl for you, even though it's still there today. But I feel it's not done as much as I think it was. The power that it has is not so much as it's was done before. So for people, for millennials today or for Gen Zs today, do you think that dynamic has shifted? Where is there a right age to settle down? Or how do you think about settling down per se?
So again, one, there's no age. Of course, with every generation, that age gets pushed. Like our grandparents grew up in times of child marriage.
Right, 13, 14, ridiculous.
Yeah. Our parents, it seems ridiculous. You cannot judge the past with today's morality.
True, understood.
So I'd say, again, to our parents' generation, it became early 20s. Our generation is between late 20s and early 30s. For my person, and of course, if it works for you, like whatever age works for someone, like, feel free to decide irrespective of what the current trend's in. There are people who have gotten married at 23, 24 and are extremely happy. Like, the podcast I heard with you and Tanay Pratap. Tanay, I think, got married at 24.
Yeah, yeah.
And it worked beautifully.
And he pushed, and he advocates people to get, you know, to fall in love early, to marry early. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you find the right person, definitely. But, you know, with the dating scene today, not sure how effective that can be.
So for me, I have 4 or 5 close friends who are divorced at this point.
Divorced at this point, is it?
I'm 29 and some of them got married at 24, 25.
I really don't think people, I feel people should get, I don't think people are getting divorced enough. My impression is I feel people should divorce a lot, in the sense that I feel people are, again, I'm a bit of an idiot here, but
they're basically in toxic marriages and they're not letting go of.
Yeah, I mean, in the US, the divorce rate is almost 50%. I mean, that could be like, you know, that may be a fucked up system to begin with. But also, in India, I'm guessing it's not even 10%, or, you know, maybe 15%. I feel the number should be at least be 30%. Surely not everyone is, you know, meeting the right person at the right time. And there is some correction that has to happen, I feel.
And I feel that even if you meet the right person at the right time, let's say, the person you were 5 years ago, you're not the same person today.
True, true, true.
Okay? Now, if, let's say, you get married to someone at whatever age, 5 years later, if both of you have grown in the same direction, you continuing makes sense. But there might, and if you're thinking 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, maybe there at some point you might reach a stage where you have grown into completely different individuals and being together may not make sense. So in that case, of course, like, people can opt for a divorce. How I see it is that, why do you want the government involved in the first place? Like,
what do you mean?
Like, a marriage certificate helps either for a cheaper home loan or for getting visa in certain places.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do not have any of those two reasons, then be with someone till, like, it's like, how do I say it? You get a rent agreement for 1 year. Like, I'm not saying that you get a marriage certificate with an expiry date. You be with someone, have mutually agreed terms that, okay, we are with each other till this works out. Be respectful of each other's boundaries, understand what they're okay with, what they're not okay with. And in the rare case you both reach a stage where you feel it's not working out, then respectfully part. When
right.
you get the government involved, then of course there is intense pressure because you have invited 600 people to your wedding and you have told them, hey, we love each other so much, we're going to stay together. And now when you think of divorce, then you are also worried of some social pressure. Okay,
obviously.
I told 600 people, I announced it on Instagram and... what do you say?
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, and that is more my maximum like photograph, and then suddenly
mm-hmm.
I have to delete them, and I spend so much money on the wedding. So you have unnecessary things of the past or external factors influencing your present. Like, you are willing to live a slightly sadder life just because you told the world.
Right.
So don't get into that contract. Or when you both have, the thing is, people value the wedding more than the marriage. Sadly, the Hindi word for them is same, it's shadi.
Mm-hmm.
But the wedding is a 2-3 day event where you do the announcement. The marriage is what's between those two people and how you work it out, and you focus on that. If it's working between you two, like, take it for as long as it won't, but don't stay in a relationship where you are unhappy just because you told 400 people who don't give a shit about it.
But I mean, the inclusion of kids, I think, takes that whole toll to a different, I mean, it gets a little messy. I mean, I think, what is that? Getting a divorce when both of them are, like, you know, independent and, you know, they recently got married, I think, but just tossing the dynamics of kids, right? I don't think Indian society is still ready for, I don't know how to, I mean...
Kids without marriage.
Yeah, in the US at least, you know, they have, I think they have a lot of people get divorced and, you know, they have a system where... what is that? They have custody, you know.
Battles.
Custody battles. And here, it's all very, what is that? All very unknown. And, you know, it's very new. And I think it'll take at least, not our generation, for maybe Gen Z to get a lot of divorce. And maybe the generation after them, where it's kind of normalized still. Where even for us also, it's acceptable that, you know, huh, it's a divorce, it happens. You know, something like that.
So, I would not give any advice or pointers for people who intend to have kids. I don't have that context. I don't have enough information or context to say how they should work it out. I again come from a perspective who, let's say, is not thinking about kids for whatever personal reasons, like whether it's me or for anyone else. If you're thinking about kids, then of course you might want to get into a marriage, and there are of course other things involved as well. So, of course, it's possible to have kids without marriage. We have a few celebrity examples, and then they've also eventually found love, even if the person has run away from the country. Yet, people with existing kids have found love, and it works out for them.
By what age, by when do you ideally would like to get married? Do you have a goal in mind that isse pehle karna hai or something like that?
It's not a goal. Like, if it has to, it's like, how do I say? I've not kept a, there's no timer running.
Do you believe in a soulmate?
Again, so the thing is that, look, I'd say that you could find someone who's like even meant to be with you forever. Yet I feel marriage as a institution or contract came in, of course, at times where, let's say, women did not have the agency to work and were dependent on, let's say, a male to for their life, let's say, for their basic necessities as well. Of course, that's still the reality for a large part of India, but for the privileged section where women are independent, have their own identity and career, in that case, you can say they may not need the security of that marriage contract that the government offers.
Quickly dodge that question, huh? Okay.
No, sure. Matlab, if I missed it, please restate it. I'll not be
No,
bored the
no, no,
questions.
no.
Are go for it, Ray.
But I was going to ask about kids as well. But I think you mentioned you have no
I have
plans
no
or.
plans or intentions of getting kids or marriage at this point.
Understood, understood. How was your experience at you did it in BITS Pilani, no? Your civil engineering, if I'm not
BITS
wrong.
Pilani, Hyderabad campus. It's in Hyderabad. Somehow our degree says Pilani.
Oh really? I didn't know that. Okay. How was your experience there?
Fun. Had a good time. Learned a lot. My first exposure to people outside Delhi, and I realized, oh, it's possible to be humble, or let's say, you don't have to be flashy or egoistic or arrogant at all times.
Are people from Delhi really that? I mean, even so, I've not done a lot of traveling, but I started in Christ, and we had a lot of people from North India. And the general impression they would give about people from Delhi are, these are arrogant motherfuckers, very arrogant and very cocky. Is that largely true? Is that
It
stereotype
is.
true?
It is.
Okay. So it was a shock for you, is it? Like people can be humble and.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, I was shocked first 6 months in college. There has been no fight or violence. There's like people are not doing stuff to flaunt money or anything. People dress simply, like to an extent. For the first 3 days, I was probably the only kid in the entire freshers batch who was wearing shoes to class. And like to an extent that people were staring, why is this guy so dressed up? And then the fourth day I went outside, bought sandals just to blend back in. I'm like, okay, then I maybe don't need to wear these all the time and I can be more comfortable. And then slowly we all move towards lowers and everything informal worn in college.
Would you get into fights in Delhi as well, or were you not of those?
I would probably not, like I would have been the one least involved in conflict, partly because I wasn't the strongest, and secondly, I knew how to talk. But I'd definitely hear of at least one fight every day or every alternate day in school. Okay. This day, this guy beat this guy up. The next day, they fought outside. Third day, somebody came outside his tuition to beat him up, or something or the other was
That
happening.
must be a horrible way to live, though. I mean, if every other day there is something happening, I mean, people would be tiptoeing everywhere.
Thing is that in Delhi it's the acceptable norm, or that's how it
That's just
is.
normal, isn't it?
And
Even
it's not,
today, you're saying, is it?
well, I'm sure there are enough fights in school that happen, and how do I say it? They again, it builds some amount of resilience in people.
Really?
Yeah, like at the end, whether you say that cockiness or like, of course, in every fight, somebody does get beaten up eventually. Yet that person continues to show up, and so that also helps them be, I don't know, more confident, more arrogant, more cocky. And whenever, let's say, any of these people have to deal with someone who's from South, who, let's say, stereotypically might not be very arrogant, so the people from Delhi might be pushy or be able to get their way around because of these behavioral skills. So it has its advantages as well, but of course, I don't want any child to get beaten up in school. But sadly it happens, and I can tell you what the consequences are.
So what did you do, like, I mean, after what were your plans after getting, after doing you know, after getting into BIT? Did you just think, you know, I'll just get a normal job, or did you, had you started doing comedy in BIT, or was it before that?
So I started comedy in college, like I discovered stand up in college and then gave it a shot as well.
Sorry,
in college itself, in third year.
BIT, or was it before that?
In college itself, I was like, the first time I saw stand up or knew it existed was in one of our college fests, and I felt, oh, this is great, like this is fun. I had never seen it. Then YouTube had just come in, so then we saw a couple
YouTube
of...
YouTube, in the sense, what year are we talking?
So I was in college 11 to 15.
Okay.
So you...
That time I think this All India Buck Show was trending a lot, I think, no?
Yep, so that was the time where AIB was there, and in stand-up we had Rivaldo and Vipul Goyal primarily on YouTube. I think I was in final year when Biswa came out with a couple of videos as well. So we got to know them, and...
But at this point, you are not thinking that, you know, you'll go into comedy full time.
So I think in my third or fourth, 2014, 15, I don't remember, Vipul Goyal had come to a college and he was performing. So I just casually asked that, can I do a 5-minute opening spot? And since it was my college and I'm a senior, I could get it. So he just said, okay, like do whatever. Just in, like once you're done, introduce me with these lines. And I'm like, great. And somehow it went okay. Wasn't that bad. So we,
but that was the first show that you did.
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
So you decided to open to one of the biggest comics in India, and you had no stand-up experience.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I am performing. How do I say? In my own college, I know more than half the people, and I know them. I know the college.
No, that's the part that is scary, right? You know half the people there, and if you go and bomb, that's going to be really fucked up, right? Like, doesn't that scare you?
I don't think it did at that time. Like, once I got to know the craft of comedy much later, where I realized, okay, that I need to have X amount of laughs and the joke has to be, or I can't go for a minute without making them laugh. Those things, or those, that consciousness came much later. That time I was like, I go on for 5 minutes, even if I make them laugh 4 or 5 times, I'm happy. Less expectations from myself, lower benchmarks. So I was like, worst case, I'll talk for 5 minutes and come back. I had not even thought ki, okay, I will bomb, or none of the jokes will work. I'm like,
I don't believe that. Really, you didn't think you'd bomb at all?
Not in that performance. I realized that bombing was possible a little later. So after the show, Vipul asked me that, okay, you're doing decently, you should do more open mics, you will get better. And like after college, if you want to come to Bombay has a lot of open mics, so you can start performing there. I was like, great, next semester is supposed to be internship. So while...
No, but how much time did you prep for that, for that set, that 5-minute set?
I don't know, a few hours. Well, of course, a few hours spread over 4 or 5 days.
Few hours, really?
I did not... See, I'm telling you, at that time it may have seemed, okay, wow, like I put in a few hours of effort and the show went well. Everybody was like, okay, it was decent. And of course, 4 minutes of me and then after followed by 60 minutes of Vipul, they're definitely going to remember 60 minutes of Vipul. And some would say, ki, haan, tera bhi achha tha, and move on in life. And as long as nobody came and booed, which was anyways something I was not expecting, because was fairly known in college. So worst case, and because okay, I'll say I had been making memes at that time in the college Facebook group, so I knew, and there was some feedback on it. Like I'd probably become the most liked post at that time, and I'd do a lot of shit posting, and it would work. So one, people knew. Two, I had till then grasped some amount of what humor works for this college at least. I used to think that humor sense is universal. Once I went to Bombay, did my first open mic, then I realized that, oh, all the jokes that I have ever written, or all the understanding that I have about humor, is only about things that would work inside my college. Because it's either about engineering or courses or how the internet is slow or whatever. The moment I go into a show in Bombay, they have not seen any of what I'm talking about.
So it's mostly like, because you didn't know, I mean, it's the benefit of ignorance there.
Ignorance
is
bliss.
Like, ignorance is bliss, where you didn't know a lot of things and you just took the leap and landed pretty well, I would say.
Yep.
Understood. And so after that first open mic, or that first 5-minute set, so were you like, you know, this is the shit, and you know, I want to keep doing this, or were you like, प्लेसमेंट भी करना है, जॉब भी करना है, व्हाट वाज द थिंकिंग देयर?
सो अगेन आई वाज लाइक आई वांट टू डू मोर ऑफ इट, लाइक आई एंजॉय डूइंग दिस. इट्स लाइक इफ आई हैड अ लाइक it's like if I'm going to play basketball on 3 days of the week, one day of the week I'm happy doing this also if I get a chance. I had not thought, okay, can this be a career, can this be, I'm like, this is a fun activity to do in college like any other co-curricular I would have in school or college. And the goal was again that since I was studying civil, the intent was to get into a good civil company, and that continued, and then eventually I had placements and got into a company called L&T. So that way it was on track that okay, this will keep happening on the side as something I do in evenings, but I was looking at a civil job most till in like my entire college life.
Should people should aspiring comedians is it wise for them to do comedy full time right after college?
Now again, everybody's context is different, so it depends on one, what sort, like again, of course, someone from a privileged family can definitely take that risk. Someone who either has an education loan or has a family to support would probably want to go for a job. For a lot of comedians, for example, Samir Raina could be an example where his comedy was working. Should we wait for the
no, no,
class?
Sure, we can.
We're waiting for the plate to pass.
You
mind
if I
like
this?
Huh, please feel free. Yeah. So, Samay is a good example of how comedy could work right after outside college, because it was working for him while he was in college, so it worked out. And let's say he did not have, I'm assuming he did not have home loans, or he had started making some reasonable amount of money.
So he started off, he didn't take any job and just started doing this full time, is it?
Yep. That's what I know, at least.
And it's possible to like make a living like month to month?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are a lot, like Samay in that case is, let's say, famous, has a 1 million YouTube channel as well. But there are enough comedians who did not, it also depends on what college, what did you study? In a lot of cases, people who have finished engineering would either want to recover their investment or get some extra income. But for someone, let's say, if their best option was a job that would probably max pay 10k, and if they feel that through whatever gigs they can make even equal that amount, then it makes sense for them to switch to comedy directly after, like, because later on it can only increase. But someone who, let's say, might be right after college probably, let's say, getting a job that pays 1.5 or 2L, then the context for them might be different. So again, it depends on the context of your family, what your other options are, what the other alternate opportunity is. Of course, a lot of people might say that if they are committed to the art form, they'd be okay making less also in that case, and that's completely their choice. But just weigh your options, or if you want, try out a job for some months, because worst case, it will give you some things to talk about.
Understood. So let's jump around a little bit. So when did you decide to go to Bombay? So when you, and was the decision to move to Bombay exclusively to pursue like a full-time career in comedy?
So when I moved to Bombay, I had been doing stand-up full-time for more than 2 years.
You quit your job at L&T
So I joined L&T in 2015, right after college in July. But the posting was in a much remote place, and the work was not civil-oriented as expected. It was more of just project management and ensuring that there's, like, I needed some civil knowledge to go through the day, but that was probably 10% of my work. 90% was just being there, ensuring things are in place, or let's say counting the number of JCBs that came in. And counting I learned in class 3, so I was sure that I did not need to study all this work.
So
and
you were in Hyderabad only, is it? Or did you move back to Delhi during this
time? So L&T placed me in a remote site which is in Haryana, around 100 kilometers from Delhi.
Okay.
I was privileged because the other people on my side, their hometowns are much further, so I could, let's say, worst case, on a Saturday night after work was done, rush to Delhi, try and do one or two open mics, and then go back on Sunday or Monday. But they would have to probably wait 6 months before they could go. But in 3 months I realized it's not the best use of my time or resources also, so I decided to quit. I came back to Delhi, became absconding from L&T, and joined and luckily found a startup job in a week called Shuttle.
Okay, I'm a little confused. So when you say you were doing stand-up, you were doing stand-up full-time for 2 years before you moved to Bombay. So this was in Delhi or?
I'll tell you the timeline. 2011 to 15, I was in college in Hyderabad. Okay. 2015, I get placed in L&T. I worked there for 3 months till September 2015. 20th September 2015 is when I joined Shuttle. It's a startup in Gurgaon. So I moved from 100 kilometers away from Delhi to Gurgaon to work in this company. 2015 October to 2017 October, I worked with Shuttle.
Shuttle.
And then I moved to Comedy Full Time.
Which, did you move cities for that? Did you?
No, I stayed in Gurgaon. Well, I think last 2 months of my job when I was sort of making up my mind that I have to do full time. So that's when I moved back with my parents.
What made you decide to like throw in the towel and, you know, say that I want to do this full time?
So till then I had gained certain confidence on my skill in terms of, okay, like I'm gaining skill, I'm getting better, and I've reached the stage where I could do longer shows, let's say do 20-25 minute sets. I knew that I was, let's say, out of all the peers, I knew that, okay, I can make my sets work in certain audiences and I could in some cases lift a dead room as well. So I thought that, plus comedy was a booming industry at that point. Like I think the first Amazon special had just started coming in for Indian comedians, so it was a massive win. Earlier it was just, okay, you put out a video on YouTube, if it works, you start selling tickets, then you do tours, and then you get shows from colleges and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So then I realized, ki, okay, if I said worst case, I leave my job for 1 year, I may, and the up, like, I'm worst case, I lose my salary of 1 year, but on the upside, if I make it or if I become famous and shows start selling out, then I would easily start making at least twice, and then eventually I would recover what I lose in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a calculated bet, and at that time, of course, Shuttle was also growing slightly larger, so like going from early stage to late stage, it was a little friction also. So I thought, ki, okay, I'll quit my job, try for 1 year. Otherwise, now, like earlier, I did not know how the job industry worked, or people were afraid about ki gap years will make you unemployable. But when I had...
That is bullshit, right? Do you think there's any validity to that? Like,
there will be some companies or some recruiters who might not take you for that reason. But you'll never be out of... But you'll have to be smart enough to find those opportunities. Like, I was... Like, when Shuttle happened, I found someone share a random Facebook post. I applied. Like, of course, to an extent, having a... Not... I don't want to tier it, but yeah, tier 1 college degree helps. But if you hustle hard enough, you'll always find a job. Worst case, what will happen? If you've taken a few gap years, you'll join at the salary slightly lower than what you started with. That's the worst case. But you'll still be... As long as you're willing to work hard, you will have the option to work.
Understood. So initially you decided, I mean, your game plan was you'll do it for 1 year, but obviously you did it for 2 years and then again you moved to Bombay. So what happened there in between?
So 1 year, so I gave myself 1 year, and in that 1 year I completed my 1 hour show. I sort of performed it 4-5 times, put all my effort into... let's say promoting the show, sold tickets, and then recorded videos at Canvas Laugh Club and then released them.
But that video is not on YouTube, is it?
It is.
Really?
Yeah, those are the videos, like those are the only 3 stand-up videos on my channel, and they are 4 years old.
Huh, but you have split those videos, isn't it? I have not seen, is there a 1 hour video that I've missed, or is it?
No,
like
it's not a 1 hour.
It's a chunk, right?
Yeah, so of course you don't release the 1 hour. So the idea is that you build 1 hour 15 minutes, then you release 15 minutes.
Okay.
And if they work
like
out,
bit
then
by bit by bit you release them. Okay.
No, you release 15 minutes only, and then you tour with that 1 hour. Like you perform that 1 hour live for everyone across the country. But for them to buy, it's
like a teaser.
Yeah, it's like a resume.
Understood. Okay. And then like, what made you move to Bombay though?
So again, well, I'll put in some more story for you here. So 1 year I do this, I release the videos. Now, because the feedback loop is short, and I'm sort of seeing growth. Okay, now my videos have worked. Now I need to work on more content and see how I can release more videos.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, now I'll push it for one more year.
I'm so sorry. So one more thing is, now you put those videos up on YouTube, right? And I noticed that the videos have done pretty well as well. I think some videos, I think north of 500K.
So now the issue is that don't
you get income from that YouTube as well?
Oh, no, YouTube. For most stand-up comedians, the YouTube views will hardly get you the shooting costs.
Really?
Like, yeah, I'll tell you. So, first video did 850K, second video did 500K, third
that's
video
huge.
Did Yeah, and the total YouTube revenue was 23,000 INR. The shooting cost of the shooting plus editing cost of the video was 45k.
Oh my god. So what do you think it takes like for a person to break even on YouTube at least? Because I have noticed, and this may be like survivorship bias as well, where I'm only seeing videos which I've done very well, where these Indian comics have north of 2 million views and all that. So even you don't think even they are like, I mean, obviously there is some income, but not enough to sustain like on a monthly basis.
So see, you know, for a comedian who, let's say like Zakir and Basti's videos will have crore, like tens of millions of views, 20 million, 40 million, 50 million.
That is huge, yeah.
Yep. Now the thing is that for them to shoot, I was lucky that I put three cameras one day and I, well, again, I was frugal also. I could have recorded, like, those videos are not very the best of performances that day. Like the audience wasn't, let's say the audience turnout was low that day, but I still, because I had put in so much money, I'm like, I will have to
fuck
get
it,
these videos.
It, yeah.
But people at that scale, they shoot five, like Kamra's videos, he shot 17 times before he released those first three videos.
Really?
And even if he does, so even if, let's say, he gets 20x my views, he will still get the revenue that will only cover the total shooting cost.
Oh my god, you're blowing my mind with the economics of this situation.
So that's what, for us it's the resume.
Mm-hmm. And they make you, I mean, these comics make most of their money just from touring, isn't it? Like, I mean,
live shows, brand deals, corporate shows is where the comedians will make money. YouTube will work as their just a resume or their personal website or their LinkedIn, if I can say it.
Understood. So going back to moving to Bombay.
So then I did another year. After 2 years, I realized that.
So in this intervening 1 year, you got a little bit of growth and you got that 1 hour show ready. How much time did it take you to get that 1 hour show?
1 hour took, well, of course, I had some 20-25 minutes when I quit my job. So refining it and adding, let's say, another 40 minutes to it, 1 year it took. And Biswas Mathematics, which I suggest to every comic, is like, you focus on building 5 minutes of material every month. So in 12 months, you'll have 60.
It is crazy, right? Like, I mean, it's crazy that for a 60-minute stand-up, you take a year. I'm just surprised by, like, you know, for us, it's like, you know, on a Sunday afternoon, 2 to 3 p.m., I'm bored and I watch that, you know, YouTube clip. But for the comic, that's a year's worth of development. It's just mind-blowing. Right?
No, first hour could take 2 to 3 years. Second hour would probably take an year. Your third and fourth hour, you could probably churn out quarterly as well.
I don't think, really, because I mean, even some of the best comics, my knowledge in comedians is not very high, but from the Western comics that I know, like Joe Rogan or Bill Burr, even they come out with content, I think, once in 2 years. Or, 2.5 years, 3 years. Even, I think, Kevin Hart. I was going to say Kevin Spacey, but I was like, who the fuck? Even Kevin Hart, I think, he's extremely hardworking. I think even he does once in 2 years, I think.
Yeah, so that when you want to put something on Netflix, then you keep the quality bar very high. And plus, if you're that famous, your bar would be even higher.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say it's possible to, let's say, get a basic structure, right? Like, if you've become so fluent in writing comedy, then you can probably create an hour in 3 months when it's your third or fourth hour. But then you tour it, you workshop it, you fine-tune it, you keep improving it. Some jokes you might even scrap and then say, no, I want to do something else. Or, so, even if, let's say, Kevin Spacey, for example, Zakir Khan has probably 2 or 3 specials on Amazon.
Okay.
He has 6 to 7 hours of material that he already has in the pipeline. Some of them he might have written before he released his first video as well.
Understood.
So he might want to keep it, park it, work on it better. Maybe a lot of content is not something that might work online or is not for a platform or something that will only work live.
Did you not think about, like, once you started uploading videos on YouTube, and we'll come back to Bombay again, but just on YouTube. So, when you started putting up these videos on YouTube, and you saw the traction or saw the views, did you not think, like, you know, let me just keep preparing more content and let me just put videos online? Was that never?
I'll tell you what. So, right now it might seem 850k is a great number,
huh.
But at that time I was heartbroken that I had failed because every other comedian at that time, or people I admired or worked with, or my peers, were easily going north of 1.5 to 2 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1 mil was the, how do I say, the passing marks.
Really?
Yep. At that, and this is pre-Geo.
Ah. Because like one mil is what, 10 lakh people, right? Like that
yeah.
is a lot of people watching the.
So think of it this way, na. If it's 10 lakh people across the country, let's say 1 to 1.5 lakh would be in Delhi, 1 to 1.5 lakh in Bombay, others in interiors.
Mm.
Okay? So if 1 lakh people have seen your video in Delhi, let's say 1% would have liked you enough to, let's say, subscribe or comment or think about seeing you live. Or let's say at least watching more videos or whatever.
Mm.
And then for someone to then like you enough to make their evening plans around you, buy a ticket and come, is much shorter. So Bussi's video have 40 crore, like 4 crore views, or I don't know, 4 crore views. He's not selling 4 crore tickets, that's true, right?
Mm.
He's probably selling 4 lakh tickets or I don't know, 5 lakh tickets across the country, which is probably the highest.
Mm.
Like the show he did it.
So the Basir guy is the top guy, is it like?
Right now, I'll tell you. The biggest comedy show that has ever happened by an Indian comic, which happened 2 weeks ago by Basir, he sold 10,000 tickets in Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if after, he collectively has over 100 million views on YouTube.
Oh my God.
So from 100 million, if it's translating to 10,000, so for me from 800K, it will probably translate to 8 to 20 tickets in a show.
Understood.
So when I again, and that was the number that was coming out. So I'd after the videos released, I started putting shows in Delhi and in the area. So I would get, let's say, under 20. Well, I'd sell tickets, but it would never cross 25 to 30 at that point. So again, it's not sustainable because I cannot do a show every day. Also, if I have done a show once in month and I've pulled my entire pool there, then the next show will not have 25 people unless it's after a gap of 1 or 2 months.
Understood. At this point, did you see a lot of? I mean, I want to get into fame a little bit. So, did you see a number of uptick in people recognizing you, or did you have that fame, the brush with fame at that point?
It did not happen then. Well, people did not recognize. Like, even if they had seen the video, but then you realize if people are watching 3 YouTube videos a day,
For them it's just another guy.
Huh. And plus, unlike YouTubers at that time, like people like Bhuvan Bam or who were putting out videos week on week, we comedians would put max to max one video every 3 months or one video every 6 months.
Mm.
Most of them keep that frequency. So it's very easy to forget as well, unless they liked it really like a lot. So I did not face any, let's say, recognizing me due to stand-up videos at that time.
But today,
and you'll be surprised, it happens today either due to Instagram Reels or LinkedIn, that we have seen your posts on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the surprising part for me as well. But because again, on LinkedIn, I'd be posting regularly, or Instagram Reels to a certain extent were regular.
Understood. How much time would you spend on writing? Like, I mean, when you were making that 1 hour set as well, but I think only when you were making that, because I think that time, since you were full time and you were really committed to it, how much time would you be actually spending? Like, would you be spending every day on writing content, or like? How is it like how is the lifestyle like when you're doing comedy full time? Like, I mean, is every day you're busy? Like, are you doing open mics every day? Like, how is that lifestyle like?
So open mics, again, Monday to Thursday, people would hardly show up. So we'd probably be in cafes where people are already there and then say, oh, hey, you didn't sign up for it, but there's some comedy. And most of us struggling comedians would show up, do 5 minutes each and see what works and what doesn't. And of course, people would be more interested in food. So you do that struggle on Monday to Thursday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you'd see more turnout because people are willing to go out, and even the cafes and everything are more full. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday would be our peak days. Like on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we try to do 2 or 3 open mics in a day as well. Like, do one, rush to another venue.
Mm-hmm.
And Monday.
But what's the use of that though? I mean, are you like validating your material? Because I would assume that if you're doing it in one place and if you're getting the laughs, I'm assuming it would translate to the other. So what's the validity of that? Or is my assumption wrong?
No, of course it would. It is A/B testing to it is a funnel only. Like, let's say I do for a 5 minute joke, I would, let's say, have 15-20 punches written there. If I go with 20 punches, let's say 6 or 7 would work well, 4-5 would be like mild chuckles, or half of the people are laughing, some would extremely bomb. So then the next open mic, I would rewrite the ones that didn't work. I would probably change, or if I had another idea as well, so I'd like, yeah, even if this worked, let me try the other option, see which one works more.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep doing that for every punchline, every, because at the end we are optimizing for a laugh every 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So a 5 minute thing needs to have 60 punches. So the first time you write it, you cannot have 60 working punches in one set. You will probably start with 5 and then work your way or keep testing till you reach 45, 50, 60.
And how do you write these? Like, I mean, what is, I mean, first of all, I think you have to, for a comedian, I mean, you have to decide on what topics you want to write, right? Like, I mean, everybody, I think, has their flair and the topics that they want to discuss.
So usually it starts with one particular funny observation or thing that happened to you or anything, and you start with that and then you build around it. So if you want, we'll try it. Give me any random topic or any object or anything that happened to you.
Laptop? Object?
Okay.
You want an object or?
Or let's say, and pick any mundane thing that happened to you yesterday.
Mundane thing, getting a coffee.
Theek hai. You got a coffee. Did you order it or did you go to a restaurant?
I got it like a takeaway. Yeah.
Okay. So, and you went to what place?
Sendur. Sendur Cafe.
I know,
yeah.
Sendur. So, let's say you go to Sendur. The normal life would be, you go to Sendur, you give your money, you get your coffee, you drink and come back.
Hmm.
Now, let's say you were getting something that happened which would spark the topic, would that you were taking coffee and somebody spilled their hot coffee on you.
Hmm.
Or you spilled hot coffee on someone.
Hmm.
Now from here you start either improvising or visualizing what else could have happened. Like, did that person scream? Did you scream? Or if the coffee was spilled on you, did you feel burned? Or you felt, or you had one sip of the coffee and you're like, yeah, itni bekar thi, achha hua gir gayi.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
And then you think of why do you want coffee? You do a lot of mind mapping and things. Okay, what if the coffee had, now for you, coffee had not split, right? Spilt. But I asked you, I gave you an imaginary scenario. What if it had happened? So that what if is where you imagine the worst possible and then you try to find humor there.
Understood.
And like, okay, now for example, if that person had a white shirt, now it's brown. Or you turned and it's spilled on the other person and you're like, you were worried about that their clothes might get stained. But then it was a police officer and his clothes are already coffee colored.
Mm-hmm.
So technically you're happy ki uske upar hai, but then you realize, oh, he's a cop. So now he's going to be angry and he might put you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep building. Now, of course, I would try these four things. Probably cop uniform matching might be funny. Him putting you in jail might not be. Or then you take the entire scenario. Now he's taking you to the police station. Now he's filing a report. What will the report? He spilled coffee. You sit in the jail. You have a conversation with the guy. Why you arrested? You said, I spilled coffee on the cop. And the other guy has probably... is someone who did an acid attack.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, thoda dark territory of jokes, or has done a much serious crime.
Uh-huh.
And then you're thinking, oh, if I had to be facing the exact circumstances as this guy, I might as well have tried acid.
Okay. So how much over the years, right? I mean, has it gotten easier for you to write a joke, in the sense that does it ever get easier, or even though you know the process, just finding like the right joke is still a grind, like, or is it like a muscle that kinds of
The muscle training has happened, and like I could do it right now, think of 10 different scenarios. Comic who's been probably doing it for 1 or 2 years might have taken longer, but at the same time we also come with a filter bias, because we have seen so much comedy, we're like, we don't want to do this is already done. So one thing in comedy is that the only way a joke works only if you have not heard it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's the element of surprise.
Mm.
So if you say a joke that you might have already heard, you're not going to laugh and the show goes flat.
Right,
so
right.
You have to think of original material that you feel nobody has probably done.
Right.
So then because you have done so much comedy and seen so much, then you will discard a lot of jokes that might work, but you don't personally want to do it because you don't have faith, or you don't feel it's ethical to do a joke, or it's too simple, or it's a low-hanging fruit, so you would skip it.
Are there some topics that you don't get into at all?
Religion is illegal. Like anybody's sentiments get hurt and they pick a fight with you. I'm okay with politics, but then again, I don't enjoy doing political jokes that much, so they're very few in my sets. Rest, I personally work with ki
anything goes.
Anything goes. If I find it funny or if it's funny enough, then let me not restrict you. This is funny, but I do only corporate humor or I do only this, so this should not be done.
What is it about like comedy that what is it about stand up that excites you? In the sense, is it the laughs? Is it the fame? Or is it the lifestyle? Like, as a successful comic, I mean the fame that you get and the following that you get. What is it that you kind of like the most?
I'd say two things. One is the laughs. They are addictive. And if you personally also have probably been with a bunch of friends, said something and they all laughed, and you sort of feel a little warmth and a little happy inside, right?
Mm.
So imagine getting that 5 times a minute. You get addicted. We call it joke coke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
I think I read that in a tweet of yours as well, joke coke.
Yep. So it's like cocaine is what you say. And the second is, stand-up has the shortest feedback loop. Like, you work in a job, you get an appraisal after 1 year. And that's when you get to know how well you did. If you're doing a theater performance, you do a 1 hour long play, and that's after that, everybody stands and applauds. You sing a song, it's a 4 to 5 minute song, you finish and then people clap or they're raising their torches or whatever, or they just hoot. Stand-up, you get feedback in 12 seconds. If a joke works, you'll hear laughter. If it doesn't, you won't.
Mm-hmm.
So...
That's
it's instant gratification.
The laugh is... So, just on this, like... On artists and... I don't know. On artists in general and maybe comedians, I wouldn't say in particular, but... is there a sort of emptiness in you that that kind of drives you? Or is there some, you know, some lack of something that you're trying to fill? Is there something like that? Is there some dark desire or some shit like that you want to pursue? Or is it just like is it very normal and you're just into about comedy and that's why you do this?
So most artists, I'd say, would... I'll say most comedians will definitely have some mental health issue.
Hmm.
At the end, all performers are in a way attention seekers. Either early on in childhood, they realize they enjoy the attention, or once they try the art form and they get the first taste of it is when they get addicted. And in terms of emptiness or anything, of course, everybody has their own personal traumas or reasons to feel unfulfilled. I'd say that stretches outside comedy as well. But in my case, I'd say again, it's the joke coke and just that enjoy, like that feeling you get while being on stage that I enjoy, which is why I keep going back to comedy.
Understood. So tell me about Bombay, like what happened in Bombay?
So after completing, so first year I did a special release video, they worked. By second year, now the kind of comments and the feedback, and now I realized that I had to significantly improve on delivery. And that needle was somehow not moving in the second year as well.
Okay.
So and of course, in terms of cash also, I had not again reached the level that my salary was 2 years ago.
Hmm.
So I decided to manage another comedian, like basically, I hope these dogs are not...
No, that should be fine.
So I decided to manage another comedian as a side gig, because one, it was closer to comedy, two, it would not take my entire day, and three, I would be around shows anyways. So I started managing Kunal Kamra.
But why did you think... Pass. But why... why managing though? I mean, in the sense, like, did you not fear that you were moving out of the comedy space and, you know, trying to do something else? Did you not fear that? Or was it just like, you know, fuck it and let me just try this and I'll do comedy as well?
So,
or did you not see it impacting at all?
The conversation started with Kamra asking me to find him someone.
Okay.
So for 2 months, I tried looking for someone. Ki X person would fit or Y person would fit. But somehow we didn't find the right fit. So then I said, fuck it, I'll only do it.
Okay.
And moving away from comedy, I knew if I'd gone back to a job, that would be much further away.
Mm-hmm.
Here I realized that, okay, shows are in the weekends. So weekdays, at least I can do my own open mics in whichever place I want to. Plus, there was that opportunity of, well, again, it wasn't promised when I joined, but I had hopes that I'll get to open a lot of shows.
For Kunal Kamra.
So I have some guarantee.
Kunal Kamra is like a big shot, right? I don't know.
Yeah,
he's a big comedian, right? Okay.
So, at that time, of course, he was doing 1,000-seater shows in most metro cities. And significantly, let's say 200 to 500-seater shows in smaller cities as well. At that time, which is 2019 to 21, where comedy was at in terms of, and plus he was doing international tours as well and selling out in different countries. So probably the biggest stage I could get at that, like, imagine if, like, if I'm putting my own show, I'm finding it hard to pull 20 people and performing with him, there are 1,000 people
already
there.
What does it take to, like, what does it take to manage, like, a comedian? Like, what needs to be done?
So basically planning which cities on which dates, what are the right flights, basically where to stay, like either close to the airport or close to the venue, which organizer to give the show to. This would be standard managing a comedian. In case of Kunal Kamra specifically, a lot of add-ons came. To give you context, he speaks a lot against the current government, which is why a lot of political and religious organizations are sort of against him, trying to shut him down. So in his case, we would have to take police permissions that can we do this show or not. And in his case, there would be a lot of court cases that also came along. He's probably the first Indian comedian to be taken to the Supreme Court.
Really?
Yep. And we...
And is he banned in... I think I read a tweet again. Can you just fact check this for me? Like, is he banned in certain states to perform, or is that like a funny tweet?
No. So a lot of states have been canceling his shows. Like, when I was managing him, then Gujarat was a no-go, and to an extent, UP could be problematic at times. Now, of course, as the government has become stronger, now more and more states, we have had shows cancelled in Bangalore, Hyderabad, and recently Gurgaon as well.
Okay. Did you like the management gig? Are you still doing it? No.
So
you didn't like it so much that I was assuming that. Did you plan to pivot for now? Fuck it, I'm just going to manage comedians now. Did you ever think of that?
Yeah. So that option came, and the moment people saw, so most comedians were managed by a certain agency who used to take a 15% cut of their incomes, and was too, because a large organization had its own shortcomings. In case of Kunal, again, because one, I understood comedy. Most of, let's say, other artist managers are not performers themselves. So I would know how to get this stage, lighting, sound, everything right. In terms of, like, I can tell you if this is a condenser cardioid mic, then what is the range that it will probably capture in based on what gain settings that you have.
Understood.
And I would also know that I have to not let audience record and ensure everything in his order, keep the organizers in check. Three, most comedians knew me, so I had a certain idea of, let's say, my integrity and commitment towards the craft. So once I started managing him, a lot of comedians approached if I'd like to do them as well. But then I knew if I'd taken another one up, then my comedy would get sidelined, even if it meant more money or whatever. So I passed on a few good opportunities. And of course, at one stage, Kamra and I both considered, should we start a agency that manages other comedians? And of course, if Kamra is one of the partners and people see how flawlessly our system was working, because like earlier, let's say when a comedian is doing a whatever seater show, a comedian would max to max get 40 to 50% of the revenue of the show. So if you're selling 200 tickets at, let's say, 500 each, the revenue is 1 lakh? No, my math is that. Okay, 200 seats at 1,000 rupees each, it's the venues, the revenue is 2 lakhs.
I don't even want to volunteer because I am worried I'll say the wrong answer. Yeah, I'm just shutting my mouth now.
200, 2,000, 20,000, 2 lakhs. Jitna bhi, 2 lakhs or 20 lakhs. So the artist would only get 40% because there'll be rent, flights, all those costs. Then the organizer would take 20% of the profits. Now, after that, if 15% the management takes, so the artist would usually get 40%. For Kunal, I was able to drive up that number from 40 to 70.
Oh, okay. He must have been very happy with you then.
Yep. Well, I think so. He's said that a few times, so I'm hoping he's saying the truth. So that worked out well, and I also was able to, now again, that's where, let's say, my bits engineering and my startup experience were helped was, now in a agency, the artist manager will do different things. For posters, they will have a separate graphic designer. For ticketing, they would have separate, and so on and so forth. Now the organizer would list the show in their Book My Show account, then the money would come to them, and then everything. So I sort of reversed the model, set list the tickets through our own Book My Show account so that we get the GST benefit as well, and then we can either pay the organizer in advance or we can pay him as soon as the money comes in. So
a lot of flights today, huh?
And they knew about our podcast. So earlier, after doing the show, the artist would probably get the money 2 months later. 1 month Book My Show would take, and then another month the management agency would process. So earlier it used to happen that Book My Show will send to the agency, agency will cut their 15%, then send to the artist.
Mm-hmm.
So that would create a gap as well. So that 2 months, basically 2 months of cash flow gets improved. Then earlier the organizer would take 20% because they said that we are taking a risk and everything, but I improved the model saying that once, in case of Kunal, we are sure that we'll sell X number of tickets, so we'll pay for the venue and then give a fixed fee to the organizer. So instead of taking 20%, he'd say, I said, okay, by 20% you'd roughly make around this amount, so take a fixed fee of this amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day I would double the ticket prices.
Oh,
so now earlier the organizer, if the deal was still 80-20, the organizer's share would have doubled. Even if the workload is same, he has to book the venue, ensure everybody with tickets enters, everybody gets seated, light, sound, the arrangement, the effort is exact same. And let's say an organizer who's doing a 500 seater auditorium show in Bangalore, if tomorrow, let's say Kenny lists a show for ticket price of 750, another comedian lists it for 500, Kamra lists it for 1000 rupees.
Mm-hmm.
The organizer has same effort, yet he will make he will charge all the three comedians differently.
Mm-hmm.
Which I felt was slightly unfair. Like, you fix a fee based on your effort or services that you're putting. I'm not denying the organizers put in a lot of effort. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be done, and I and Kunal might be traveling to a different city. We have no local contacts and we can't come 2 days early just to get everything done. So take a fixed fee, and then that way I was able to increase the total revenue as well. Not just the 70% part, but the overall income also increased.
What made you stop managing it?
One, obviously, was pandemic. Two, I realized I had learned everything about the...
Were you like the victim of the pandemic?
No, not really. I was lucky because working with Kamra had its perks. Like, my salary never stopped. Even if months there was absolute no work, or even if in months there was no revenue, which was a large part of the pandemic, I would still get paid on time in advance. Like, I'll tell you, the day I joined him, even the best workplaces in India, let's say CRED gives you a month of salary advance.
Okay.
Working with Kamra, I got a year's salary worth of check on the first day of working.
Really?
Yep.
I should apply for a job there anyways. okay. Are there any benefits to, like, once you work with someone like Kamra, you get to meet a lot of people and you're touring and you know, your network kind of builds. Are there any benefits to that? I mean, in terms of comedy, because I'm not able to think of any, in the sense that, because comedy, at the end of the day, you have to prove yourself on stage, right? So are there any benefits to, like, in a regular organization, you can maybe meet a lot of people and there's a job opening and then you can, you know, you get the job. But in comedy, are there any specific benefits to, like, knowing a lot of people? Like, is there?
So I'd say that in terms of, let's say, appealing to the audience, I have to write funny jokes and I have to make them happy. That part is independent. That no amount of connections or nepotism can help.
Yeah.
What it does help in that I would know organizers in every city. So if tomorrow I become famous enough to do a show there, I know exactly who to call. I know all the venues of what capacity that exist. I know their rentals. I know the decent places to stay, what usual flights I've forgotten now. And that's true for international as well. Like, a lot of, again, after, like, leaving, working with Kamra, I've been able to connect a lot of comedians so that they could plan their shows in Australia, UK and everything with the organizers Kunal worked with. And they've been able to. So, of course, tomorrow when I am at a stage where I can do these tours, I know the exact process and how to optimize it as well. Like, for example, in case of Kunal, what happened was that in London, he had his show sold out, and now because the entire Europe tour is booked, so his flights are already booked and he knows that there is enough audience asking for another show, but we don't have let's say the evenings or the slots are full. So sitting in India, I found a comedy club in Manchester that was willing to give their space away in the afternoon, and I knew his show in the evening was a place 2 hours away by train from Manchester. So I planned everything, booked a show from 1 to 3 p.m. in Manchester, then 6 p.m. he has to reach another venue on a Saturday evening, on a Sunday evening, then do 2 shows there. So basically optimize that opportunity as well. So business of comedy is sorted for me if the only thing that is remaining is fame.
So yeah, so let's talk about that now. So in the sense, how do you see your comedy career? Are you looking back, right? Like, I mean, you started off in, I think, 2013, 2014. It's 2022 now. Looking back, like, how do you think about your comedy career?
So I have come to terms with the fact that I can keep getting better and better, but in all probability, there's a chance that I don't make it to the top 20% comedians, who are the ones who flourish, do a lot of shows and everything. The remaining 80% can still have a chance of survival.
But why is that? I'm so sorry. So one reason is comedy is unique in one way is there is no age factor, right? In the sense that I think music has an age. Music and I think acting as well, depending on what kind of roles you want. I mean, you can always, like Breaking Bad and all, I mean, Bryan Cranston got his role when he was, I think, 50 or some shit like that. But comedy doesn't have that, right? I mean, you can be 45, you can be 55. George Carlin, I think, was selling out shows when he was 60, 65 as well. So there is no age factor there. So why do you say that you may not make it to the top 20%?
I said based on current skill and current audience response.
Okay.
Like in terms of like the laugh density or the applause break density I get or have been able to get at my peak is still far from what, let's say, the top 10-20% comics or what it takes to be in that. It's to give you an equal. Are you a cricket fan, Mahin?
I know.
Okay. What sport do you follow?
I am not a sports. I watch a little bit of UFC.
Okay. So,
but you can give me the cricket example. I think I know
yes,
how cricket
it's like
works.
I might do well till Ranji. Probably best case make it to India 18.
Okay.
But the playing 11 might not happen. Is what I feel right now. I could be wrong. I could turn tables around 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I've found that the ability to make people laugh, the ability to be interesting and entertaining, is useful in a lot of scenarios. I can tell you what my, so when it comes to, let's say, my current job in terms of marketing, I can tell this is something that audience will enjoy, this is something audience will not enjoy, which is something that marketing people cannot really say because they come from their bias or they've seen ads, or it's like because they watch branded content so much, they watch it for learning.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas an audience member or people who have nothing to do with marketing or in general customers, they will skip it.
Mm-hmm.
So that sense is valuable there in terms of video content, or like basically a lot of places where that judgment, what is funny, what is not, and to make things on the spot helps.
But how much of making it as a stand-up, like how much of your identity is kind of wrapped around in making it as a stand-up comedian?
Again, it depends on how people know me. Like, you might have approached me looking at either my stand-up background or what I do at Slice. So people in the comedy industry definitely know more about my comedy than they know about what I've studied or what I do in jobs. Like, a lot of comedians don't know what the other person does for job. They're like, haan, is company mein hai, or this is what their designation is, I don't know what they do. So it again, I say I'm a funny person, but I'll not say that my identity is a comedian, considering I've also been very infrequent in comedy for the past 1 year.
Why is that though? Due to the pandemic, you're saying, mostly?
No. Pandemic, though, I was very frequent. Like, I ran a venture where we made a comedy club or a canvas laugh club on Zoom. And I did a show every day for more than 100 days.
I think you, I watched a video where you roasted some White Hat Junior as well. That was also part of that, is it?
Yep.
Understood. And now, like, are you still actively, like, writing, like,
I write funny stuff for sure. Now...
No, like a one-hour special, do you...
No, that is not something that's happening at this point.
Is that like a conscious decision, or is that like, are you just not motivated to write, or what is the factor there?
Again, I'll say not motivated enough, like in terms of stand, like of course, you need to see certain growth to feel, I should put more efforts into this. So that didn't happen, which is why stand-up has been on the back foot. And of course, I found a new muse, or let's say, during the pandemic, Clubhouse happened and met a lot of folks from the startup ecosystem and felt, okay, this is also something that I'm interested in and I enjoy knowing better. So which is why I jumped to Bangalore. Now I write a lot of jokes which are specific to the tech industry and exploring what is there in, let's say, venture funded startups at this point.
Understood. I want to go to Bangalore, but
Bombay is not finished.
No, but just on the stand-up comedy, what is like the... You want the lighter, is it? Yeah.
I was hoping you'd not say that so that there is no audio evidence. Like, I understand it might be there on video,
no.
But...
Oh, like that, huh? No, it's fine. We can edit it. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, on the stand-up... like, your future... You mentioned you're working on, are you at this point, are you working on something, or in the next 1 or 2 years are you planning to like release like a show?
So I'd say again, that's like saying, are you planning to score a double century in international? No, the starting steps will have to be, are you planning to get back into more net practice and playing more local matches? Yes, if a special happens as a consequence, or if I keep going on that path, then of course it's possible.
Do you do open mics now in Bangalore?
Yes, but very few.
Very few. Understood. Are you worried about like people calling you an ex-comedian? Does that come to you? Does that thought come to you?
Matlab, if it does happen, then it does. Like, although I feel like once you're a comedian, you cannot become a normal person again. But I don't say it from the fear of, let's say, being called an ex-comedian. I say it from seeing people who might have quit comedy or have, let's say, drifted away. But at the same time, there is some amount of thought process that, like, you still have that comedic thinking happening or questioning or trying to find the idiosyncrasies there.
What makes a successful... what does it take for someone to be a successful comedian today in India? What do you think it takes?
Of course, it's like constant iteration and constantly growing. I think one of the reasons I sort of slowed down or didn't do well was that at one point I wasn't going back, listening to my recordings and then improving on those jokes. I was sort of taking either things for granted or like thinking, okay, I heard and I vaguely remember these lines worked, these ones didn't. If I had been more diligent, then I would still be at it and of course progressed a little more. So I'd say diligence at improving and at the end keeping audience feedback as the primary North Star rather than looking for peer validation from other comedians.
Understood. So what made you decide to come to Bangalore?
I think during the pandemic itself, I saw this job posting for Chief Meme Officer. I was staying in Bombay at that time. And I thought that it's either a prank or first I'll just apply for it. I was not looking for a job. Like both, like salary from Kamara was coming. I was running a comedy club on Zoom and had 3 people working for me for that venture. And of course, there was some discussion around people wanting to put an angel check in as well. There were 6-7 angels interested. But I was still figuring the business model and other things out. So, but then I saw this posting and I thought that I will apply, sit for the interview and use it to create 5 minutes of stand-up material. Matlab, I'm in the middle of pandemic, sitting at home. I'll get a new topic to talk about. Ki, how was the job interview?
Mm-hmm.
So I just gave the interview. I'm like, let's see what happens.
But were you into doing memes before that? You
memes
were,
of course.
You said you had
memes.
That Facebook page and all. And,
So there was a Facebook group which was supposed to be an article. So I had been making memes since college. And I saw this. I'm like, worst case, what I'll do? They'll make me make 5 new memes. I'm happy. Like some exercise. It's like just flexing the muscles.
So what is like a chief meme officer? Like, is it just like making memes for the company? Is it and just posting them on social media? Is that the description?
That's what I came expecting, but it turned out to be nothing of that sort.
They fucked you, is it? No,
I'm not saying fucked. It's like of course they also were open or okay with that idea, but once we got into the nitty gritties, one, we realized that it's a financial sector company, so we can't go too outrageous in memes. Two, there was, let's say, a certain even before when I applied for the, of course I had not made my resume in 4 years, so instead of sending a resume, I just made 10 memes and sent it to the founder in an email ki, if you're looking for a chief meme officer, here are memes that I made based around Slice, see if it works, then we'll talk. And then they replied that okay.
And at this point, you were still working for Kamra though?
Yep.
Okay.
Working for Kamra and running my own comedy club thing.
Understood.
So, then a few days later, someone from the hiring team got in touch, had 2-3 calls with three days had calls with 3 different people, and I was also excited, okay, let's see how memes can work for a brand. I was looking forward that, okay, I'll create fun content for the brand and it looks like a place where I'll learn something new, because pandemic also, I was sort of feeling a stagnation, because not too many shows are happening, I think it was second wave or third wave, between second wave and third wave at that point. So
where were you during that time?
Bombay. So I was sort of feeling a stagnation and I felt ki I need something new happening in life so that I at least learn. So I thought, okay, I'll just join this, and even if I don't like it, I can always, there's always an option to quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just go see what I can do. I'll also learn a few things. If they also like me, then I will also have tried something new sort of a situation. So I joined, and even if, let's say, after 2-3 months, I realized memes were not working, but then obviously there were other projects to take on. So after 2-3 months, we realized that because it's a serious category and RB and everything is also involved, so we'll probably cut back on memes. So then I picked up influencer marketing, did it for 2-3 months, had a lot of learnings there, then moved towards YouTube. So a lot of marketing learnings were happening, so I was again a switch worth moving to. And I understand that I might be slightly unhappy that I'm not making memes, but again, there are things that were in nobody's control, nobody could foresee at that time.
Understood.
As long as they, the person who hired me, Yudan, she had the right intent, so I think that's in a way fair.
When did, so we discussed, we spoke about stand-up as like comedy you can do multiple ways, right? Like stand-up is just one foray of presenting comedy. But now, I've seen your LinkedIn profile as well, your tweets as well, reels. How much of a shift is that, when you're doing comedy? When you have to come up with these one-liners, right? One-liners, or you have to come up with these witty observations, either for tweets or for LinkedIn post. Is the dynamic different when you have to come up with these things, or what's the process? And when did you start, was there a time where, I want to focus on social media? Seriously?
So one-liners, again, I had been putting on since the advent of Facebook or since I was in college. Comedy came after that. And of course, even though it was the most rewarding way, because at least in 2013, putting up one-liners on Facebook was not a way to earn money. I could do it for fun. I could do it probably for the likes at that time. Likes had just come up, so everybody was addicted. Okay, I want to get more likes. But
today the game is completely different, no? From what it was in Facebook back then. Like, I mean, nowadays it's just crazy, right? Like, even for reels and stuff, the reach that you get and the kind of content that is available, that it's just some next level shit.
Mm, of course, demand supply, now the number of people willing to create is much higher.
Yeah.
Now it's become a science. Earlier it started as a hobby, became an art, now is a science. Like people have literally gone to psychological analysis, okay, what makes people share, what makes people follow, what kind of CTA should be there, what colors to use, so
what hashtags to use and all that shit.
Hashtags, I don't know, people were still focusing on hashtags, I feel sorry for them.
Really?
Yeah, it's, malab, of course my editor also puts in hashtags when she posts reels, but I don't know how many people follow or search for hashtags. Or even on Twitter, you'd see that you don't need to write hashtag startups for it to get featured into a category of startups, right? The algorithm detects it on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we sort of lost track of it. But yeah, right now how it works for me is that I think of a thought, or if some thought comes to my mind, I first form it and then decide, okay, is this for Twitter? Can this become a reel, or is this going on LinkedIn?
But I think there is some overlap in LinkedIn and Twitter, I think, no? Is Reels also, does it come, or is it Reels a different beast while creating content for you?
For me, I've, let's say, kept Twitter and LinkedIn more towards the startup ecosystem because that's where I enjoyed and that sort of was coming naturally, or I was enjoying it. Reels, I've kept it more generic towards office content, where the experiences people have during office, which could go beyond startups as well. Now, let's say if I talk about working from home or something about unnecessary Zoom calls, then that's something both startups and non-startups are facing. So that can definitely go on Instagram. It can also go on other platforms. But if it's something that only happens if it's something around valuation,
mm-hmm,
or if it's about Baiju's losses, then I may or may not post it on Instagram.
How are you finding the landscape though of like social media? Like how much how are you finding in general? And
it's very demanding now. Of course, there are more experts on social media than there are people creating content, but of course there are enough of both. But either you could look at it as a fully running business, like let's say Variku or Shamani or people or a lot of other comedians who would like consistently make it a point that they have to optimize for more shares, more reach, keep targets, like a brand would work. As I don't know, somebody said on LinkedIn or something that people are trying to become brands and brands are trying to become people at this point.
I've read that video. Mm-hmm.
So that's where the game is. I am again not pushing myself to that extreme. I'm keeping, let's say, my comfort and peace of mind and laziness in
but
picture.
I think nowadays without like online growth it's very difficult to grow, I think. What do you say? Like, I mean,
agreed, but at the same time I luckily have the cushion of a job at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So which is why I'm not too aggressive. Of course, once your survival depends on it, then you put in a different kind of effort.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas once you do it for what humor you enjoy doing, like if I don't like a reel, I cannot put it. But if someone who has to follow a calendar that there has to be a 3 reels a week or 4 reels a week, then they will either improve it, re-record it, or push it. If I am trying to formulate a thought in a tweet and then it doesn't sound so great, I'll like, okay, I won't post.
Fuck it. How much time do you spend on like social media in general?
More than I should. But it's I do a lot of consumption, which is people might say it's for research, it's my profession and everything, but truth is, I do waste a lot of time there. And I'd say if I'm putting 4 to 5 hours on social media every day, probably 15-20 minutes or half an hour is productive. Rest is my own leisure consumption. I'll not say I'm doing it for research. Of course, there are benefits of identifying trends and everything, ki haan, this is going on and everything, but it can be done. If somebody did it in a structured way, they could finish it in less time as well.
Mm-hmm. You've lived in multiple cities now. I mean, Gurgaon, Bombay. How do you find Bangalore?
It's I'll say from the tech and startup ecosystem, it's the best place to be in India. People are humbler, willing to work more, and more open to innovation. In terms of Bombay is also very hardworking as compared to Delhi, but they are hustling.
As compared to Delhi or as compared to Bangalore?
As compared to Delhi, Bangalore and Bombay. I say Bombay is even more hardworking than Bangalore.
What do you mean? Like just in amount of hours or like the culture?
In terms of hours, in terms of the amount of effort they're willing to put in, like it's very normal for people to have 2 jobs in Bombay. They're spending 2 to 4 hours traveling, let's say traveling, some people have a job in Bombay but travel from as far as Pune also. And I see, like, so in Delhi till class 12 or till the age of 18, most kids would, like, at least people from privileged or affluent families would not be thinking of working when they're 17, 18.
Mm-hmm.
But in Bombay, I've realized most people start their internships right after they come into junior college or when class 11th equivalent.
Uh-huh.
And they already, and most of them are on the creative side or something linked to either production or creatives or agencies, and they get a sense of what all work is there. Of course, there's very less tech there. Like, most Bangalore kids would not opt for engineering, or the, or even if they do, their work would eventually come back to either the creative side or, let's say, marketing, Bollywood, or some other creative form there. Like, I'd say in Bangalore, a child's first default option might be engineering, but in Bombay, it might be working in a creative agency.
How long have you lived in Bangalore till now?
1 year.
1 year. What's the biggest like pain point you face in Bangalore?
I feel like in all the other cities that I've lived in, like, of course, that migrant issue is obviously there with every local city. Like, Bombay also has some political culture where they say that migrants are the problem.
I think that's everywhere. I mean, even
in,
like,
most,
yeah, I think that's the cost of being a metro city. I mean, you know, there are always locals who despise the you know, people coming in. There's always that tension. I think that's
course,
universal. I think.
Because they would want their city to be a certain way. They would want their own people, and suddenly they see that people who they don't relate to are there, and to a certain extent they're either throwing their weight around or are in some sense having some control over a few things.
And also in general, right, I notice, I feel that migrants, when they come in, they generally do better than the locals, because when they come in, they're generally coming in for, like, high paying jobs or stuff like that. So they, I think, like, on average, they generally do better than the locals as well. At least that's my impression.
That's true for every outsider. Like, for example, even women, let's say, in an industry where there's male domination, she would eventually put in more effort than a guy would.
Mm-hmm.
So when a guy is coming from a different place, let's say, they is coming with some expectations that parents have, is sacrificing the comforts of home, and knows that they have to pay rent every month.
Right.
They have that, or they could have EMIs, they could have education loan spending, which is why they've come here. And in case of a local, you'd see that they know that, okay, even if things don't work out, they can just fall back at home, or they're at comfort because they're in their home place, home ground. It's like even in sports, when a team visits another player team's turf, they're much more alert. They know that the odds are slightly against them, or that person is more used to the area than they are.
Do you face that on a daily basis, though?
No, well, again, I'll say ki, that's one thing that sort of the one thing that, how do I say it? Like, of course, I'm migrants from a lot of places face a lot of racism in Delhi. Probably, again, I didn't face it because I was from there. Bombay, of course, we were migrants, but then we would sort of gel with the locals much more than we would probably do in Bangalore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived in Hyderabad also, so there also I'd say ki there is some resistance, but I'd say that Bangalore has that resistance slightly higher than Hyderabad as well.
Uh-huh, understood. What do you do when you're not working? Like, I mean, when you're not, like, thinking of comedy or any work-related stuff, like, what do you do to, like, just relax?
I play Call of Duty.
Oh, you're a gamer, is it? Oh, fuck.
I play it for fun. I don't have intents ki, haan, I have to play ranked matches and escalate. It's like, I'll play, even if I'm playing at the easiest level, it's just a way to turn off.
Understood. I think on that note, Garf, thank you for doing this. Thank you so much.
Most welcome, man. I hope this was useful and everybody is hearing it. Like, make sure you check out other podcasts by Ryan, and let me know if you feel that something I said is right or wrong or whatever. I don't know on which platform. Like, you can obviously find us on any platform and say whatever you want to.
Yeah. I hope we covered everything. Is there something we missed? I don't know.
I don't know. You came with questions, man. I had no set agenda.
I don't know. I feel I covered most. Is there something that we forgot to cover that you want to cover? I don't know.
No, I'm good.
All right. Thank you, God. Thank you.
Thank you.